But as yet, we haven't got anything firm on this. And it is vital for him in terms of his domestic audience that he returns with something to show for this visit.
And trade progress, of course, appears to be the immediate focus today, Kate. But what other issues are both sides trying to manage behind the scenes?
Well, clearly, certainly for the Chinese side, the Taiwan question is utmost. Xi Jinping saying just that yesterday. And also, it was the top of the readout from the Chinese side of that summit, whereas Donald Trump, the Americans did not mention it at all, although Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, has since said that the U.S. policy towards Taiwan has not changed and will not change, but I'm sure the Chinese president will bring that back up again. But Donald Trump really wants support over the conflict in the Middle East. He wants support over ending the war with Iran, reaching a peace deal and reopening the Strait of Hormuz. He said in an interview yesterday that privately Xi Jinping had agreed to do just that and support it. But again, we haven't seen anything public from the Chinese side on this. And again, that is something that Donald Trump could come home to the US to say that he was also making progress on the conflict in the Middle East, which is obviously indirectly causing huge issues for the American people in terms of how much it is costing them to fill up their cars and buy groceries in the supermarket. And essentially, that is what really will matter to Donald Trump, because it's an election year here in the US. He's not on the ballot, but the Republican Party is. And they want to be able to speak to their constituents positively about the cost of living. And it's all related to the situation in Iran.
Kate Fisher, thank you so much for your reporting from Washington, D.C. And of course, Tan Zihui in Beijing. I'm sure we'll speak again soon. Thank you for the updates. And as time goes by, hopefully a live dip into pictures from Beijing. Well, there were no major deals or announcements on the first full day of President Trump's visit to China, but there were certainly pomp, pageantry, platitudes, and perhaps room for deeper cooperation.
President Xi Jinping welcomed his counterpart Donald Trump with a long handshake lasting some 14 seconds on the steps of the Great Hall of the People. And great is how Mr. Trump described the delegation traveling with him. Key Trump cabinet members, flanked by top business leaders, including Tim Cook, Elon Musk, and Jensen Huang. They looked on as the ceremony took a patriotic turn as the military band struck up the U.S. national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner. From inspecting the Guard of Honor to meeting the Chinese people, it was the children who impressed Mr. Trump most, thinking of the future of relations as the leaders began talks.
Those children were amazing, and they represent so much. And I know they represent so much to you. It's an honor to be with you. It's an honor to be your friend. And the relationship between China and the USA is going to be better than ever before.
应当做伙伴而不是对手。 相互成就, 共同繁荣, 走出一条新时代大国正确相处之道。
Behind closed doors, the Chinese leader tackled the thorny issue of Taiwan, warning Mr. Trump that differences over it could bring the U.S. and China into conflict. Washington has approved a multi-billion-dollar arms package for the island. It's a red line for Beijing, which sees Taiwan as its own territory. Later, Mr. Trump ignored reporters' questions on the issue when he visited the Temple of Heaven.
Great.
Did you talk about Taiwan?
Great place. Incredible. China is beautiful.
Did you talk about Taiwan, Mr. President?
The 600-year-old temple was where imperial emperors prayed for good harvests. Some analysts say Beijing was hoping for the same in bilateral ties. Taiwan and other contentious issues such as Iran and trade took a backseat as Mr. Trump was hosted to a state banquet. Mr. Xi hailing the bilateral relationship as the most important in the world. That sentiment extending as two leaders toasted each other, with Mr. Trump inviting President Xi to visit the U.S. in September.
And in the lead up to today, CNA has spoken to several analysts about the language used at the summit so far and what this means for U.S.-China relations going forward.
Well, I don't think that President Xi is saying that the U.S.-China relationship won't be a competitive one. I think what was very striking about some of the comments that President Xi made, I think it was at the dinner, at the state dinner, was that he said that President Trump and himself agreed on a vision for the future, and he called it a constructive relationship of strategic stability. And in that constructive relationship, he talked about how, you know, in this constructive relationship of strategic stability, cooperation would be the mainstay. But there would also be competition, but that competition needed to be kept within proper limits. And within those limits, that differences would be manageable.
I think you might be able to call it a modest reset in the relationship in both directions. I think the biggest word coming out of the first day has to do with strategic stability. And that is a label which we've not used either side in the relationship. The Chinese have talked about partnerships and cooperation, the U.S. about competition. Stability is in the middle. And you heard that again and again from President Xi Jinping. And it's going to be the biggest word that's a takeaway from this 2 days of meetings.
And the two of them have determined that they want to not be caught into Thucydides' trap, not to have this relationship spiral into a war the way it has typically done in other cases, but to do what President Xi calls create a new form of great power relations. And they began to do that in trying to articulate a different idea about the U.S.-China relationship in this summit. I think President Xi's lines, which President Trump then reiterated, is a constructive new stability, a new strategic stability. And that's easy to say, hard to do, but I'd say it's a step in the right direction.
I think there is a need on both sides to, again, to cooperate, at least on the where it's possible to cooperate. There are two major economies, two major powers, and they don't want to see the relationship derailing and leading to more, uncertainties and more instability. So now in concrete measure, I think there will be more trade, but also more negotiation on political issues all the way from Taiwan, but also Iran. Situation in the Middle East and also in the Indo-Pacific region as a whole.
Up ahead, it's your Asia Business Update. The U.S. moves to end its fraud cases against Asia's richest person, Gautam Adani, and his nephew. They've agreed to pay a total of $18 million to settle the case without admitting or denying the allegations.
Right in a chaotic moment.
Midnight later tonight here in Thailand. It's too little too late.
And I ask whether there's a political element to it. Nobody can exactly tell you why.
Look, things are never perfect when you're engaged in politics.
Each one doing what each one wants.
So what's the United Nations doing amidst this world of supreme chaos?
We're pushing for answers every night on Asia Tonight.
$2 million. That's how much we lost in prepaid beauty packages in 1 year.
How much do you have left in unused packages?
Close to $50,000.
I'm going undercover to find out if there is something deeper at play. Prepaid packages, bargain or bad deal? Talking Point Sunday on CNA.
As a bank who've just turned 90 in 2025, supporting SME is not just part of our business now. It's also woven into our DNA.
What advice would you offer SMEs looking to plan for the next phase of growth?
Number one is connectivity. Number two is digitalization, developing SME resilience through digital transformation. And number three, sustainability, really using sustainability as a key business driver.
Sands PopCon Asia is back, happening 23rd to 24th May at Marina Bay Sands Expo and Convention Center. It's two action-packed days of non-stop fun for kids and families. From special Bluey and Baby Shark experiences to meeting real-life mermaids, kids can also try martial arts, creative art classes, have fun on bouncing castles, and cheer on the cutest stars at the Kids Cosplay Competition. Grab your tickets now on SizTick. For more details, visit www.kidspopconasia.com.
Time for business this Friday morning, and Asia's richest person is closer to ending a major U.S. legal battle. The Securities and Exchange Commission is said to have settled a civil lawsuit against Indian billionaire Gautam Adani, subject to court approval. And court records show Gautam Adani and his nephew, Sagar Adani, will pay a total of $18 million under a proposed agreement. The duo were accused of breaking U.S. securities rules, allegedly making false and misleading representations about Adani Green Energy. The SEC says they allegedly paid hundreds of millions of dollars of bribes to Indian officials for lucrative solar energy supply contracts. Gautam Adani chairs the Adani Group conglomerate, spanning coal, airports, cement and media. And Sagar Adani is executive director at Adani Green. Both have consistently denied any wrongdoing. The Justice Department's also reportedly moving to drop fraud charges against Gautam Adani in a parallel case. Adani recently hired a new legal team led by one of President Trump's personal lawyers. Reports also say the billionaires promised to invest $10 billion in the U.S. economy. Asia-Pacific markets heading into negative territory after an earlier bout of euphoria over tech stocks gave way to inflation fears. South Korea's benchmark KOSPI reverses course, retreating from a fresh record high above 8,000. And the earlier gains were fueled by optimism that the Trump-C talks could ease tensions around trade and technology exports, particularly for chipmakers and AI-related stocks. And in the currency market, the won is a touch weaker against the greenback. South Korea's tech giants are pulling back after driving the recent market rally. Samsung Electronics turned into the red after its labor union said that the companies proposed resuming wage talks without preconditions. As for SK Hynix, it heads lower on the back of some profit-taking. And shares in Samsung Electronics have risen about 190% over 6 months, while SK Hynix shares gained 220% over the same period. As for other regional markets, they're nursing losses led by Japan this time. The STI and Taiwan's TAIEX both down as the momentum on tech stocks fizzled out. Greater China markets remained cautious as investors track the second day of high-stakes talks between U.S. President Donald Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping. All three key indices in the back foot. Well, oil prices hovering around the $100 level as traders continue to assess the free flow of vessels in the Strait of Hormuz and signs of closer oil ties between the U.S. and China. In Asian trade, prices are inching higher. Both contracts eased in much of trading overnight after Iran said around 30 vessels had crossed the vital choke point. But an attack on one ship and the seizure of another stoked fresh concerns over the flow of energy supplies. Traders' anxiety eased, though, after the White House said President Trump and President Xi have agreed that the Strait of Hormuz must remain open. Reports also that the Chinese leader has expressed interest in buying U.S. oil, though Beijing's never been a big buyer of U.S. crude and it hasn't imported any since May of last year due to the tariff war. Meanwhile, a U.S. waiver on Russian oil is set to expire tomorrow. India has reportedly asked the U.S. to extend the waiver on sales of Russian oil already loaded on tankers, which the Treasury Department has previously done twice. Well, it's not just oil and gas that's been impacted by the Middle East conflict. Disruptions of fuel and fertilizer supply have wreaked havoc across economies, particularly the Philippines. That's one of the world's largest consumers and importers of rice. And as prices go up, many have called on the government to do more to alleviate their hardship. CNA's Melissa Goh reports from Cebu in the Philippines.
Filipinos love their rice, from steamed rice, garlic rice, to sticky rice in banana leaves. There's even a chocolate rice porridge called champurrado.
The Filipino usually eat rice.
They eat rice every
day? Yeah, yeah, three times a day.
Every meal.
Every meal?
Yeah. Breakfast, dinner, lunch.
According to government statistics, the average Filipino consumes about 190 kilograms of rice a year. So when prices go up by a few pesos a kilo, they feel the immediate impact straight in their pockets. Here at Tabuan Market in Cebu City Center, many types of rice are available, priced at 50 to 60 pesos a kilo. Some varieties have interesting names. Some are locally produced and some imported.
Now, here's my Jaguar rice, priced at 50 pesos a kilo. That's under $1. Now, this is imported. And according to him, the locals prefer imported rice simply because they are cheaper.
Traders say that prices have been fluctuating in recent days due to uncertain fuel supplies pushing up logistics costs.
My concern is price is high, that the salary is low. The other people, the salary here in Cebu is low.
Filipinos say that the cost of living has gone up by 30% since a crisis in the Middle East erupted in March. They lament what they see as a lack of government assistance. Some are also worried about job security.
Our number one worry is, of course, our job will still
be there for us,
no, to provide us with our salary, to provide our food.
Her husband, who's a farmer, hopes that the government will provide some form of subsidy to cushion the impact of higher input costs.
For me, I can feel it. I can feel the help from government right now.
Yeah. Because I know the also aside from the increase of the fuel, other products also are rising. Like for example, pesticides, the
fertilizer prices.
Chemicals.
Has it gone up?
Yeah, also.
How many percent?
Like I said, 30%.
Although the Philippines government has been actively building up its rice inventory since rice emergency was declared last year after severe weather damaged crops, the oil shocks since March have triggered a logistical nightmare. This after pump prices doubled to over 140 pesos a litre last month.
Because very important for us now is really the movement of at least the food all over the country. We are 7,600 islands, so the movement, especially of food, medicines, and essentials are very important, so we cannot cause any delay for this.
Leaders at the recent ASEAN summit in Cebu, the Philippines, have proposed tapping the emergency rice reserve with China, Japan, and Korea, coupled with a possible regional oil stockpile. Measures aimed at mitigating fallout so severe that even the province's tourism sector has been left reeling.
We serve many agencies, the Korean agency, Japanese and Chinese agency, ma'am. All of them very low.
How many percent the cancellations?
70, ma'am. 70%.
Why they don't want to come here?
Because we increase our rates, ma'am.
Cherry says some staff have been forced to go on no-pay leave, while others who work on commission are finding it hard to put food on the table. Many, like her, whose livelihoods depend solely on tourism, say they need more help, fast, as the crisis continues to exact a heavy toll on the lives of millions across the region. Melissa Goh, CNA, Cebu, the Philippines.
And ahead on Asia now, it is back to our top story. Donald Trump has arrived at Chungnan High. That is where China's top leadership works and lives as he begins the second day. And it's also the final day of bilateral meetings with Xi Jinping. They will continue their discussions over tea and lunch. And we'll be speaking with Angela Mancini, who's partner and head of geopolitical risk at APEC at Control Risks, for more on what businesses are expecting out of these high stakes talks.
The world is moving forward rapidly.
Technology is transforming lives. Behind every breakthrough, energy is always at the center of progress. Powered by collaboration, accelerated by energy and AI. Join us at the Energy Transition Conference 2026.
CNA is the strategic media partner for the Energy Transition Conference 2026.
Saturday on Japan Hour. Famed for its deers, cycle around Nara across persimmon fields, shrines and temples. Once the capital of ancient Japan, visit Akofan, the ancient burial site of emperors. Japan Hour, Saturday on CNA.
Japan Hour is brought to you by Sumitomo Corporation. MUFG, committed to empowering a brighter future. Zip Air, no fuel surcharge from 216 Singapore dollars. And IHI.
Sporting event in the world is back, bigger than ever. Mediacorp brings you the FIFA World Cup 2026 action. Don't miss out on the FIFA World Cup 2026 action. Subscribe now at $118 with instant activation. Catch a total of 104 matches from Canada, USA, and Mexico live on any device. Or catch the latest highlights and matches on demand. Get your FIFA World Cup 2026 action on MeWatch. No contract, no installation, with instant activation. Subscribe now and catch your favorite teams battle it out for the coveted trophy. Go to mewatch.sg/FIFA World Cup for more details.
South Korea's skilled labor is sent to Germany in exchange for loans.
나 자신을 발전시킬 수 있겠다. 가족들도 도울 수 있겠다.
Service and sacrifice that shaped a nation.
그분들이 지금 일을 많이 해가지고 많이 망가지고.
Adrift, the pioneers who built Korea. Tuesday on CNA.
Hello again. Good morning. We are going to be going to Beijing in a moment when we do get pictures from U.S. President Donald Trump and President Xi Jinping at the Zhongnanhai complex. That's where they are. Meantime, the American president is scheduled to have tea, and it's also going to be a working lunch with the Chinese president before he departs China. Today is the final day of Mr. Trump's three-day visit, and the day will begin with a handshake and a photo session. I do believe that one's already completed. This particular area, the Zhongnanhai complex, it is home to the Communist Party headquarters. The two leaders will then take part in a bilateral tea session. It's going to be a less formal setting, expected to wrap up ongoing discussions. If you recall, yesterday at the Great Hall of the People, it was full of pomp and grandeur. There was, of course, a guard march as well. Not quite the same today. The engagements will conclude later with a working lunch. Mr. Trump will then depart Beijing on Air Force One and return to Washington after that. As for Mr. Xi, he's expected to visit the U.S. later this year. The state banquet yesterday, President Trump invited Mr. Xi and his wife in September to the White House. Well, yesterday, the two leaders held closed-door meetings that lasted about 2 hours. And what did they talk about? They covered Taiwan. They covered trade. They covered other differences in U.S.-China relations. The Chinese state media said that Mr. Xi told Mr. Trump that if Taiwan wasn't handled correctly, the U.S. and China risk clashes and even conflicts, putting the entire relationship in great jeopardy. We're going to bring in Angela Mancini, who's partner and head of geopolitical risk APEC at Control Risks. Hi there, Angela. President Trump and Xi are spending a second day together in Beijing. Can you tell us what businesses are thinking as they see all these pictures, even from yesterday, these pictures that exude calm and control? Do these suggest a real de-risking moment or just a temporary pause in U.S.-China volatility?
Well, that's the exact question all our business leaders here are asking because, you know, coming into this summit, if we were to have had this summit prior to the Iran conflict, everyone would be pretty much solely focused on trade and technology issues from the business community. But of course, with the Strait of Hormuz closed and, of course, Asian economies being disproportionately impacted by that, the energy concerns, that's also a big concern. So it's definitely terrific that they're meeting. It's a good sign of stability. I think that the fragile truce that they've had for 6 months on trade is important. Certainly, it's great to see the optics, you know, and President Trump coming with all the CEOs means he's ready for business and ready to play that dealmaker-in-chief role that he likes so well. But what businesses are really looking at is, besides the optics, which again are good, what substantive deals can we see coming out of this summit? And certainly there have been some early signs of purchasing agreements on, you know, and opening up export controls for beef on the U.S. side to go into China, and China committing to buy some more oil from the U.S. Obviously, the subject of selling Boeing airplanes came up and some were agreed to. But I think what business leaders are looking for is certainly A, stability. So how stable is this relationship shoring up now? And B, what might we really see when it comes to trade war detente and also tech and export controls? Those are areas that are thorny. They're not easy to address, and that's what we haven't seen much of yet in terms of progress.
Mm. So apart from all the discussions, should some possible real outcomes come about, are we then looking at real change for companies down the line? And also, Angela, after a summit like this, actually, how quickly can the business environment change on the ground?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. Certainly, if on the U.S. side, if President Trump were to make perhaps unpredictable changes or comments, again, primarily, let's say, to tariffs, as we've seen in the last year since April 2nd, Liberation Day, the change on the U.S. side from a tariff perspective could have quite quick consequences for good or for bad for businesses. The other issues, the tech and export controls issues, would take longer, I think, to potentially digest. The main issue, though, I think the acute issue that a lot of businesses are looking at is what's going to happen with Iran, because if we were able to see China take a larger role in helping to address the Iran conflict, namely getting the Strait of Hormuz open. If we were to see movement on that, which would not be something we don't expect would happen quickly, but if we did see that in the near term, that would be something that would assure markets quite readily and quickly, and we would see impacts in terms of strategic planning and markets. But so, you know, again, from the China side, things don't tend to move all that quickly. We may see some disruptive comments coming out of the U.S. side, but businesses are really looking for, again, how stable is this relationship, not just today, but the building blocks of what we might see going forward, and then what might that mean in terms of very practical things that businesses are looking at now for their own strategic planning, tariffs, tech exports, energy flows, and other flows from the Strait of Hormuz.
Okay. Angela, President Trump likes visible wins, and he's got today to wrap some deals up. I'm sure the teams are working really hard behind the scenes. What kind of deliverables are you particularly watching for, and what can he present as triumph when he lands back in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, so I think regardless of what the outcomes are, President Trump will definitely present the summit as a triumph. There's certainly a lot of great optics around it between the fanfare he got from the Chinese side, and certainly the entourage, both from the cabinet member perspective and all the various CEOs that went with him perspective. So certainly a lot to trumpet when he gets back. Certainly, I think on the more relatively easier wins to look for, and we expect some more to come out potentially today, are those purchase agreements. So the famous, the bees, as they say, beans, meaning soybeans, beef, which we've already heard about, Boeing's, which we've heard about. So, you know, are we going to see additional purchase agreements agreed to from the Chinese side? I think that would be good. certainly there's some optimism in the business community around the Board of Trade and Board of Investment. There's no great hopes that that would move the needle significantly in terms of U.S.-China trade or foreign investment. But certainly it's a good forum. It's better than nothing. A good forum for the two countries to come and talk about, you know, future economic ties and how trade might actually work. I think, though, the real issue, again, that businesses are looking for is, are we going to see something notable on any of those thorny issues? We are starting to see some discussion around AI. So that was a subject that we thought might come up, and apparently it has, in terms of whether China and the U.S. can work together around some loose ideas, at least in terms of AI regulation and use of AI and autonomous weapons or not, and some, you know, high-level agreements on regulation and use of that from a national security perspective. But businesses are really looking for some movement on some of the thorny issues. We may not see any of that movement. A good outcome, though, would be an agreement to meet again and maybe get some of those issues tabled for more specific resolution if they do meet again in September. And again, those things are what kind of tech can U.S. companies sell into China? Are we going to have any rare earth export controls coming from China back to the U.S.? And what do we see more broadly in terms of technology supply chains also related to Taiwan?
Yeah, the September meeting fueling hope and optimism and possibly two more touch points in 2026. Well, Mr. Xi as well has warned that mishandling Taiwan could lead to clashes and even conflicts. Angela, for companies operating in Asia, what does that signal and how should they build it into their risk planning?
Yeah, I don't think any of the statements so far out of this summit have changed anything in terms of corporate risk planning. Certainly, the Taiwan situation is one that businesses have been looking at in terms of their broader risk portfolio for quite some time. So as expected, we were not expecting to see anything significantly change in that regard in this trip, and it doesn't appear that there is going to be any significant notable change to be had, at least so far. I think more broadly, you know, the Taiwan situation is one of a number of geopolitical hotspots that corporates are starting to watch more carefully after the Iran conflict and just making sure they're really across what their operational footprint is, what their transit routes are, where, how diversified are they in terms of their cargo, their goods, their energy flows. So it's just one of many risk spots that the companies are watching. But we don't see this summit changing anything significantly in terms of that, in terms of a risk element.
Okay, Angela Mancini, so good talking with you. Thank you so much. Partner and head of geopolitical risk, APEC at Control Risks. And U.S. President Donald Trump is pushing for China to buy more American products, including agricultural goods and passenger aircraft. The Chinese, meanwhile, they've signaled openness to expand some U.S. imports as American businesses join Mr. Trump's delegation. You can see the business leaders here. They've been on board for his visit to Beijing. Chinese President Xi Jinping told the CEOs that the door to business in China will, quote, open wider. President Trump told media that China agreed to order 200 of its jets, but that's actually less than half of what was initially expected, pushing the plane maker's stock down 4.7%. Neither Beijing nor Boeing have confirmed these figures. And this lucrative deal could also hand Donald Trump a familiar talking point. He once joked that Boeing gave him an award as its greatest salesman. So let's take a look at the China Boeing story in the last 15 years. So we go to 2011. That's when China approved contracts for 200 Boeing aircraft worth about $19 billion. Mainly, they were 737s and also 777s for delivery within 2 years. China's aircraft purchases have often moved alongside state-level diplomacy. It's a way to show goodwill with Washington while helping Chinese airlines expand quickly. Then in 2015, during Xi Jinping's visit to the United States, Boeing announced 300 aircraft orders and a major industrial sweetener. That was a 737 completion and delivery center in China. And that was the bargain behind the bargain. China bought the planes, but they also wanted the aviation jobs. They wanted local capabilities, and they wanted a pathway to grow their own aerospace ecosystem. And the next major milestone came in 2017. That was during Donald Trump's first visit to China as president. Boeing and China Aviation Supplies announced another 300 aircraft package valued at more than $37 billion. And reports at the time said it included roughly 260 737s and 40 wide-body aircraft. And that made Boeing one of the centerpieces of the U.S.-China trade relationship at the time. And then the story changed. After the 737 MAX crashes, China became one of the toughest markets for Boeing to reopen. There was the MAX grounding, there was regulatory caution, there was COVID disruption and worsening U.S.-China relations, all hitting at once. And during this period, China relied more heavily on Airbus and they continued supporting their own aircraft maker, COMAC. So Boeing's story in China then moved from rapid growth to a long period of caution and delay. And that brings us to this week's Trump-C meeting. Any Boeing agreement, whether it's 200 planes, fewer or more, that would come after years in one of the world's most important aviation markets for the United States. Other than the size of the package to be announced, the aircraft types involved, one thing to watch is how quickly the orders will move into deliveries. For Boeing, it could mark a step toward rebuilding its position in China. Whereas for Beijing, it could signal a willingness to stabilize trade ties with Washington while still buying from other plane makers and, of course, supporting COMAC. So the Boeing story isn't just about a plane order. It's about where aviation sits in the wider U.S.-China relationship. And we've got more ahead on Asia Now this Friday. The Iran war, it's testing the unity of BRICS. We'll look at how its 2026 chair, India, is trying to forge a consensus among members as the bloc's foreign ministers meet in New Delhi.
Grandpa was the first one who came to Hong Kong.
I'm from Nepal and I live in Lisbon for many years now.
I feel that Thai people see me as a part of London. Sawadee.
Tengo es que puedo coger lo bueno de la cultura china y quedármelo, y lo bueno de la cultura española y quedármelo.
I can do anything because I stay in India 10 years.
I'm BT.
I'm proud of being Filipina and at the same time, I'm proud of what I achieved here in Barcelona.
지금은 인도에서 거의 가족처럼 함께하고 있습니다.
남이 많은가?
Things can coexist together, and that's the beauty of Hong Kong as well.
When I lead to the Chennai, I feel like, oh God, I'm home.
At Standard Chartered, we're here for those who never stand still, who want trusted expertise in the world's most dynamic markets.
Now is your time.
Zin Ishan Arvind.
He's a playboy with a reputation.
Can I be your...
What's happening, Tara?
She's walking into a risky game.
This girl right here, my new girlfriend.
But when lines blur and feelings grow...
I just want to love you.
Secrets will surface.
I just wanted to know how, you know, feels like.
Trust will be tested.
See, he's a walking red flag.
And love may come at a price. Will it save them? Or break them apart? Catch the brand new drama series, Must Date the Playboy, Mondays to Thursdays at 10 p.m. on Vasanthum and MeWatch. All episodes available on demand for free on MeWatch.
CNA wins at the Winifred Digital Media Awards Asia 2026.
Plot of land which the region of Johor currently owns.
What is causing all this anxiety?
What I'm hearing from kids a lot more these days is they are giving themselves the pressure.
Journalism you can trust. CNA.
Does working overseas make you richer? In Dubai, a young Singaporean finds out that tax-free doesn't mean earning more. When more money isn't always the goal, why she left for Sweden. And when the maths stops working, why some choose to come home. Singaporeans working overseas. More money or a different life. Money Mind, Wednesday on CNA.
Hello again. The Iran war is overshadowing the meeting of BRICS foreign ministers in India. Two of the bloc's members, that's Iran and the UAE, find themselves on opposite sides of the conflict. Iran has accused the UAE of playing a direct role in the attacks. The UAE is yet to comment on this. And the division within the bloc could potentially complicate efforts to forge a unified position on the conflict as the two-day gathering wraps up later today. Anishin Garg is covering the BRICS foreign ministers' meeting for CNA in New Delhi. He tells us how the bloc's current chair, India, is trying to find a consensus between the members on issue beyond the war in Iran.
Well, India's foreign ministry has been in touch with the delegation of the foreign ministers and their accompanying personnel. And the idea is always to forge a consensus. India has said this from get-go, especially after the war in Iran started, that consensus has been difficult to forge within the BRICS grouping, only because members of the BRICS grouping are now finding themselves on the opposite sides of the conflict. And to end this session with a joint statement is certainly going to be hard, because we haven't seen a joint statement from the BRICS grouping since the war in Iran started. There was another meeting of deputy prime minister, which ended with a chair summary of the meetings without a joint communique, which is diplomatic speak for essentially saying that the bloc couldn't agree on common language. And the common language that is in question is how to describe the war in Iran. Now, Iran, which is a member of the BRICS grouping, wants in the joint communique to be strong condemnation of U.S. and Israeli strikes on its own territory, while on the other hand, you have UAE, which wants to call Iran the aggressor of this conflict. So as we understand, experts have been telling us that India would try to find common ground with common denominators with issues such as sustainable development, climate financing, and that could form the basis of a joint communique if there is to be one.
The UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer has reshuffled his cabinet despite a potential leadership challenge growing over ever more likely. His health secretary, Wes Streeting, resigned yesterday, but hasn't yet officially triggered a leadership contest. Meantime, the mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, he's announced he will attempt to run for parliament in a by-election in northwest England. He can't challenge Keir Starmer as leader until and unless he is a member of parliament. Prime Minister Starmer is under growing pressure to resign after the Labour Party's poor local election results last week. Ollie Barrett is reporting for CNA from London.
Andy Burnham's route to Westminster is by no means an easy one. The Makerfield seat that he will try and contest is in a part of the northwest which has seen a real surge from the Reform UK party of Nigel Farage. But if Andy Burnham gets elected and can win that by-election in the coming weeks, then not only will he be heading back to Westminster, but he can claim to be doing so as a candidate that can show that they can beat the Reform Party, which has been, as I say, surging in so many different parts of the country in polls, but also in recent rounds of elections. If he does get to Westminster, a leadership challenge against Keir Starmer is almost inevitable at that point. And right now, it would look very much like Andy Burnham would be in a very, very good position to win it and therefore become Labour leader, but also UK Prime Minister. Now, Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary, his resignation did not immediately lead to the triggering of a leadership contest. He says he does have the backing of enough MPs to do so, but wants to make sure that there is a broad leadership race and a real debate amongst the Labour Party about exactly what should come next. There may well be other leadership candidates that throw their hats in the ring as and when we do get to a leadership contest actually being triggered, and we have not reached that point yet. Until we do, Keir Starmer remains in Downing Street. He says the government is getting on with its job, but that will be very difficult indeed, given the seeping away of support from him and from his number 10 administration, and in the knowledge that a leadership contest is very likely indeed in the coming months. So a chaotic and uncertain period potentially ahead for British politics, a period in which Keir Starmer will be seen by many as a lame duck prime minister as well. All the while, UK borrowing costs have been under significant pressure from international markets, which are worried not just about the current uncertainty, but also about what might come next if you had a candidate taking charge of the Labour Party committed, for example, to higher taxation and higher spending. That does seem to worry international investors at the moment, given the state of British public finances. The opposition parties say that this is all chaos brought upon Labour and Keir Starmer by themselves. As I say, Keir Starmer for now insisting that he will fight on and that his government will get on with the job. But these are very uncertain times indeed for him, for his Downing Street operation, and indeed for the wider British political scene. Ollie Barrett in London for CNA.
And from London, we go to Beijing, where our top story is. That's US President Donald Trump seeking trade wins as he meets Chinese President Xi Jinping today in the Chinese capital, and they wrap up a two-day state visit together. The two leaders began their day's events at Zhongnanhai. That is the Chinese Central Leadership Compound. And they've been scheduled to have a working tea and a lunch after that. Hard issues have been front and center at the Beijing summit, everything from tariffs to technology to Taiwan. But there's a softer side to the relationship between the superpowers, and Crystal Chia has the details.
Olga Soltes was 17 when she went to Beijing for a game of table tennis in 1971. It was her first trip out of the United States, and she had no idea it would make history for U.S.-China relations. 55 years later, Olga and her teammates from that time are back in China to commemorate the event.
I don't think we knew what to expect, even, you know, so going into this totally different world was amazing. Then when we went out of the world, everybody in the United States, we were in every magazine and everywhere, you know. We couldn't believe it, that it was such a big deal, you know. But it was and still is.
Yeah. Olga was one of nine players from the U.S. table tennis team who went to Beijing at the invitation of then-Chinese leader Mao Zedong. They were the first delegation of Americans to visit the country since the founding of the People's Republic of China in 1949. They were welcomed by then-Premier Zhou Enlai and toured landmarks such as the Great Wall. The trip started what became known as ping-pong diplomacy and paved the way for then-President Richard Nixon's visit to Beijing the following year. This year, commemorations were held in both Beijing and Shanghai. The Beijing event was attended by Vice President Han Zheng, who read out a congratulatory letter by President Xi Jinping. Scholars say these efforts are no coincidence, happening before a summit between President Xi and U.S. President Donald Trump.
This is so historically important, but also urgently matters. Two, the Trump's visit, just as the 1971 ping-pong visit preceded President Nixon, like February 1972 visit to Beijing, China is consciously invoking that same template ahead of Trump's visit.
China is a rising power. So the idea of China is not shared equally between Chinese and non-Chinese. But when ping-pong players get together, the message is crystal clear. That's power of shared vision, shared history. So maybe we could once again remember the lessons we learned from ping-pong diplomacy. If the Chinese leaders and American leaders can achieve something miracle at that time, why not now?
There are other groups of people who have seen the softer side of China-US relations. There are the Flying Tigers, a group of American pilots who fought for China in World War II. Their descendants were invited to China's military parade in 2025. President Xi Jinping himself has a relationship with Iowa. In 1985, he visited the state as a provincial official and stayed with local hosts, forming a bond that state media continues to report on. And China's panda diplomacy, another branch of its cultural outreach. China recently announced a new pair of giant pandas will go to Zoo Atlanta in the U.S. for 10 years.
The key insight here is that hard diplomacy and soft diplomacy, they are not alternative, right? They work in sequence. So when citizens in both countries see friendly cultural exchange, such as like the panda in the U.S. National Zoo, it become much more politically easier for leaders to make concessions on hard issues.
Olga and her teammates believe that sports offer a platform for nations to connect.
Everybody's so nice to us, and we come here and we, you know, it's warm and we like each other. Why can't the world be like that?
They hope that the spirit of ping-pong diplomacy will continue in a world that needs it more than ever before. Crystal Chia, CNA, Shanghai.
Lots more ahead on Asia Now, but for this moment, you're looking at pictures from just moments ago. That's when U.S. President Donald Trump met Chinese President Xi Jinping. The two leaders began their day's events at Zhongnanhai, that is the Chinese Central Leadership Compound, and they've been scheduled to have a working tea followed by lunch. We'll continue our coverage of the high-stakes talks between the presidents in Beijing. Stay with us on CNA.
Saturday on Japan Hour. Famed for its deers, cycle around Nara across persimmon fields, shrines and temples. Once the capital of ancient Japan, visit a kofun, the ancient burial site of emperors. Japan Hour, Saturday on CNA.
Japan Hour is brought to you by Sumitomo Corporation. MUFG, committed to empowering a brighter future. Zip Air, no fuel surcharge from 216 Singapore dollars. And IHI. ATX Summit, where the world meets to shape our digital future. 6 years in, ATX Summit brings senior government officials and global leaders to address the defining questions of our time. How do we responsibly harness agentic AI and set the standards for embodied intelligence? How do we transform and scale enterprise adoption while future-proofing our workforce and governance? Join the conversation as we redefine tech for a better future. Register for the virtual session today.
This is Asia Now.
Hello and good afternoon. It's 12 p.m. in Singapore and Hong Kong, 9:30 in New Delhi, 11 a.m. in Jakarta. I'm Yasmin Yonkers at this hour. U.S. President Donald Trump and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping enter a final day of talks in Beijing with trade progress in focus. The U.S. leader touting a 200-jet Boeing order from China, though neither Beijing nor Boeing's confirmed the deal. President Xi pledges wider market access as talks also cover possible Chinese purchases of U.S. oil, agricultural products and tech investments. And the Iran war is overshadowing the BRICS foreign ministers meeting in India, wrapping up today, with divisions emerging inside the expanded bloc. Tehran accuses the UAE of direct involvement in attacks, a claim the Gulf nation has yet to address. U.S. President Donald Trump and the Chinese leader Xi Jinping, they're meeting at Zhongnanhai. That's the headquarters of the Communist Party leadership in Beijing. And that's before Mr. Trump flies back to Washington later today. The U.S. leader arrived at the state guest house about an hour ago, and that's when he held a photo session with President Xi and had tea ahead of lunch and more closed-door talks. As Mr. Trump looks to wrap up his state visit to China, with hopes of securing more trade deals. For the very latest, we're joined by our correspondents, Tan Sihui, who's not far away from the leaders in Beijing, and also Kate Fisher, speaking with us for CNA in Washington, D.C. Sihui, to you first. The Chinese Foreign Ministry says that the two sides reached what it called new areas of consensus yesterday. So what's Beijing hoping to get out of today's smaller closed-door talks?
The Foreign Affairs Ministry statements, that is one of the first few official statements that I've heard from the Foreign Affairs Ministry out of the Trump-Xi talks. Now, in that statement, they said that the talks have brought about and deepened mutual trust between the U.S. and China, and this has brought about stability and much-needed certainty in the world. Now, what's new is that they have stated that there is a new positioning of U.S.-China ties. It's called the Constructive Strategic Stable relationship that will go on for the next 3 years and possibly beyond. Now, that is quite a mouthful. But what this means is that there will be sustained and stable development of ties. They will know how to reach consensus in terms of trying to address concerns of each other and also to strengthen cooperation and coordination. Now, I talked to analysts. They say that this marks the first time in recent years that both U.S. and China are now defining the status of their ties. And this doesn't remove the rivalry between the two superpowers, but what it does is it sets the boundaries and so that it doesn't go out of control. Analysts are also saying that this is a new kind of intimate relationship that's been reached between U.S. and China, and it is something that China is likely to want to stay committed to. And so this is something, a show of a warming of ties coming out of this U.S.-China summit.
And Kate, to you in Washington, D.C., of course, trade's been a major focus this visit, with President Trump keen to return home with tangible economic wins. But there are also major geopolitical issues on the table, everything from Iran to Taiwan. So from the White House's perspective, what would count as a successful outcome from this trip?
Well, I think members of the administration made it clear even before this trip began how important it would be if Xi Jinping used some of his influence in Iran to try to help the peace process come along and to try to put pressure on the Iranians to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. But we didn't see any mention of that conflict in the readout from the Chinese side after yesterday's meetings between the two presidents, although Donald Trump talks about it in person in an interview afterwards, saying that privately the Chinese president had said he would love to help in any way he could, that he agreed that Iran should not have a nuclear weapon, that he promised that China would not supply military help to Iran, and that he opposed any militarization of the Strait of Hormuz, which is quite a lot that he didn't say himself, but Donald Trump says has happened. So some kind of public Chinese suggestion that any of that would happen, I think, would be a win for Donald Trump geopolitically. As when it comes to Taiwan, he has been very silent in comparison to the Chinese president on that issue, although his Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, has reiterated that there will be no change in the U.S. policy towards Taiwan, despite what Xi Jinping has been saying about it, how important it is. It's the main thing that governs this relationship. But of course, they are talking now, and those two topics could be coming up.
So, Hui, there's been a ministry statement out which touched on China's position on Iran. Can you tell us more about that? And how central is that statement and that topic really likely to be in today's talks between the two leaders?
Well, in that statement, they said that China's position on Iran is clear. The war should never have happened. But they did say that now that the doors to dialogue is open, it should not close so that it can reach solution on issues such as Iran's nuclear weapon scheme. They also called on shipping lanes, the Strait of Hormuz, to reopen. They also called on for a sustained ceasefire to happen. Analysts are telling me that these are things that China wants, but whether it's able to make inroads, that's another thing. Because the priority for Tehran is the security and safety of the regime. So any compromise on that will have to come from Iran. They also talked about watching and keeping a close eye on any announcements about supplying weapons to Iran. So that is definitely central to the talks and likely happening at the moment in Zhongnanhai. Another issue also central to those talks, the Taiwan issue. Mr. Xi saying that it is the most important issue between U.S. and China. Taiwan just issued a statement thanking the U.S. after its Secretary of State Marco Rubio mentioning on X saying that the Taiwan stance for U.S. Remains unchanged. We have not heard from China in response to that. But these are the two most central and sensitive issues that are likely being featured during the tea chat at Zhongnanhai.
And Kate, yesterday at the state banquet, President Trump on stage invited President Xi to Washington later this year. Can you tell us how significant a return visit would be for the administration? And is there any indication Beijing is likely to accept it?
Yeah, well, I think it is significant because that would be the third meeting between these two presidents in Donald Trump's second term, which shows just how important the bilateral relationship is to both countries. And for that reason, I think it's likely that the Chinese president may well accept this. I think both countries have stated how important stability is to both of them, given all the tensions that exist. One analyst I was speaking to said that essentially the only guardrails left in this relationship, the most significant one in the world, really, is that relationship between the two presidents. That is where the guardrails are right now. And therefore, I think it's likely that both will want to continue this talking, even if major breakthroughs aren't being made. The fact that there is still communication is important to both sides. It's notable that date of September the 24th that Donald Trump mentioned when he invited the Chinese president is also the week of the UN General Assembly in New York. And it could suggest that maybe the Chinese president would make a rare appearance at that meeting, combining both if he does accept.
All right. Thank you so much, Kate Fisher, reporting for CNA from Washington, D.C. And of course, a big thanks to CNA's Tan Sehui in Beijing. We appreciate your updates. And we have more coverage on this story. Do follow our live blog, as I'm doing, on the Trump-Xi Summit. And that's at cna.asia and via our mobile app as well. Okay, we've got your Asia business update next, and the U.S. moves to end its fraud cases against Asia's richest person, that's Gautam Adani, and his nephew. They've agreed to pay a total of $18 million to settle the case without admitting or denying the allegations. Plus, India is cutting off sugar exports to keep prices in check at home. But analysts warn the move could come at a cost for the rest of the world.